Thank you. The conference is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. Welcome to the UDRP Domain Name Lock Working Group meeting on Thursday, the 31st of May. On today's call, we have Juan Manuel Rojas, Michele Nylon, Randy Ferguson, Matt Schneller, Luke Seufer, Alan Greenberg, David Roach-Turner, Volker Greimann, Laurie Anderson, David Maher, Gabriela Slack. From staff, we have Marika Konings and myself, Gisela Gruber. We have apologies noted today from Faisal Shah, Ken Stubbs, Brian Beckham, and Victoria McKevdy. If I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list, and over to you, Michele. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good. I don't know, have I forgotten anything? Welcome to the UDRP Lock Working Group, which is being co-chaired by myself and Alan Greenberg. Woo! Sorry, I've obviously had far too much coffee so far today.
I'm only a lowly vice chair, Alan speaking.
There's nothing lowly about you, Alan, unless I'm standing right beside you.
Touche.
Hey, you're welcome. Right then. Statements of interest and all those lovely, charming things. Has anybody got a change to theirs or anything to declare that would be pertinent? No? Going once? Going twice? Okay, fine. Perfect. Now, on our agenda for today, we're looking at reviewing and finalising the survey for both registrars and UDRP providers. The most recent version is on the wiki. And there's a couple other items there on the agenda. And also, Marika's put up a couple of the comments that we received via email up into the notes on the right-hand side on Adobe Connect. For those of you who are not logged into Adobe Connect but are dialed into the phone, via phone, you will have received these via email already as well, because they went to the mailing list. Okay, right. So, my screen just did weird things. Marika, does this mean I now have superpowers? Oh, they've taken them away from me again.
Not anymore. I don't think that's a safe thing. So.
You don't want. Okay, that's actually you're actually probably right. Giving me the power to run this, I'd probably end up turning it into a marketing session on why you should all register your domain names through me or something like that, which would be totally inappropriate, but would be great fun. Until Laurie murdered me. Okay then. Now looking at the. At the edits and comments we've received so far, the gentleman from WIPO sent through a red line, and Marika has her hand up. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. So the survey that's actually on the screen is the version that was sent around by Brian just before the call. This is the registrar survey, and maybe before looking into the changes suggested by WIPO, I just want to reiterate what was changed from the survey based on our previous call. And I don't know if everyone had a chance to look at the survey in detail, but in the previous version, we had several questions on there asking a registrar whether they, first of all, do you lock a domain name when it's subject to UDRP proceedings? And then several questions on do you lock it when you receive a notice, or do you lock it when you receive a request for verification? And when I was doing the edits based on our previous discussion, I had the thought that maybe it would make more sense to actually bring all those questions together and start off with asking when do you typically lock a domain name pursuant to UDRP proceedings, and then go into the details of how such a lock looks and what kind of changes are prevented by such a lock. The question I did have and also posted on the list is this of course would presume that registrars apply one kind of lock for the duration of a UDRP proceeding or exceptionally make changes to such a lock for which a question is also provided. If this is not the case, that are, if a registrar typically applies different kinds of logs at different stages of a UDRP proceeding, we might need to reconsider how the questions are phrased and maybe go for the suggestion. I think what Sherry suggested is actually make a more open-ended question and basically ask, you know, what kinds of logs do you apply and at what stages of the process do you apply those? So I think that would be, you know, first question based on the current structure of the survey, you know, what approach should we take with regards to, you know, registrar logs that are applied during a UDRP proceeding.
Okay. Does anybody have any comments, thoughts, input?
And this is Maria, just one thing to add. If the typical thing is that, you know, only one kind of lock is applied, and that combined together with, I think, a desire from the working group to make the survey as easy as possible, then, of course, as it currently is written, it's the easiest because people just need to click the boxes. With an open-ended question, it does ask people, you know, to write down details, and, you know, we might not get the details or the answers that we're looking for. So, you know, if they're... I think it would be helpful to get an insight from the registrars on this call whether indeed typically, you know, once a lock is applied, that's the same lock that stays in place for the duration of the whole process and no further changes are made to that.
Okay. Thank you. Alan and then Laurie.
Yeah, Marika just basically just said what I was going to suggest. If we can get some input from the registrars on this call about what they normally do, let's keep the questions as simple as possible to address the typical case and then put an other type thing in to address edge cases if there are some people who do things quite differently. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Alan. Laurie?
I was just going to say that I think that most registrars, including us, probably aren't going to be bothered going back and changing locks and making them into different locks. Once it's locked, they're going to just leave it locked, and that's what we do. We have one type of lock, and that's all that's necessary, unless we receive, you know, a court order that tells us to do something different.
Okay. Any other registrar types would like want to make any comments on this, or should I start picking on you? Happy to do either.
Michaeli, it's Ellen. You can put on your registrar hat and answer these kind of questions also. I don't think it violates...
Don't worry.
The sanctity of the chair.
No, don't worry. I will quite happily. but I will try also... I'm also a strong believer in encouraging as many members of these working groups to give some input. So I'm going to start picking on people. Luke?
Yes, I'm there.
Yes, and I'd like you to answer the question.
Which one? Sorry.
Luke, we love you to death, but oh dear. What kind of lock do you apply to a domain in UDRP, and do you change it during the UDRP? Laurie's suggesting that most registrars wouldn't change it. They'd apply one lock and just move on.
Yes, I agree with Laurie.
Okay.
You do the same, yeah.
Volker, do you change the lock you apply during a UDRP at any time?
No, we just apply all four locks and be done with it.
Okay, and since Alan did remind me that I can put on my hat as a registrar, for the record, we take the shortest, simplest route possible, so I think all we're doing is just applying all the locks and then moving on to stuff which actually earns us revenue. We just want to get it out of the way. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, so this is Marika. So in that case, I would suggest that we indeed leave the questions as it currently stands, as question 7 does provide for those that, you know, do not apply the same lock, to provide further details there and indicate in which cases, you know, they might make changes. So I think, you know, that might work the best then in that case. So I don't know if you want me then to just run through the survey or, you know, look at the changes, or maybe have David talk around the changes that were made to this one. I had a quick look over them, and I think most of them were minor changes just to the wording. I didn't see any any major issues that were changed or added here. I think there is the one question that that was part of the email that WIPO sent on whether there should be a question in there asking registrars the number of UDRP proceedings they're basing their responses on. So that would be another question that would need to be added if the working group agrees that would be information that's needed or good to have as part of the responses.
Anybody? No? David.
Thanks, Michelle. David, I haven't got very much to add to that other than to say that if there's any of the particular textual suggestions that people want us to comment on further, we're very happy to do that. Most of them are intended simply as clarifications, of a textual nature, and I think they pretty much speak for themselves. The main reason we've made the suggestion that we did with respect to the number of UDRP disputes is particularly if we're taking the approach in which the registrars that would be responding would not be identifying themselves, we think it would be useful to get some sense of the volume of the UDRP disputes that sit behind each individual registrar's response, so we have some sense of the proportionate value of the feedback. Obviously, if you're looking at a response that's coming in from a registrar that's processed hundreds or thousands of disputes, you're going to weigh that in a certain way as opposed to a registrar who's coming in with a comment on a handful, 5 or 10 or something of that nature. So that was the reason for that suggestion.
I've put myself in the queue, David, and just to actually reply to you on this, there's two sides to that. As a registrar who would be in the category of the very low volume of disputes, I think we've probably had today's, I'll say less than 10. I think it's a fairly safe number to use. Whereas obviously larger registrars would have had much higher volumes. The problem from our side is that while we may not have as much experience as registrars doing larger volumes, we are still contractually obliged to deal with them, both yourselves and the complainants and the respondents still need to be treated seriously and professionally and all that kind of thing. From my own personal perspective, it costs me more to deal with the low volume, if you understand where I'm coming from, which is why greater clarity around some of these things would be helpful for me personally as a registrar. So whereas somebody who might be dealing with large volumes kind of takes it as a given that that X, Y, and Z are the things to do, somebody who deals with a smaller number might see issues that those who have been dealing with it for years wouldn't see. Luke, you've been typing away madly. I'm going to put you in the queue. I'm sure you have an opinion on this. Okay, Luke's put in the chat, asking for statistics or research. Not sure many registrars would take the time to do this research. A fair point. And I'm going to put Luke on the spot again. Luke, roughly how many disputes have you guys dealt with, roughly, over the last 12 months?
Last 12 months? A dozen, maybe more. Less than 50.
Okay. Oh, could you speak up a little bit? You seem to be miles away from the microphone, or else I'm going deaf. I'm not too sure which it is.
Is that better?
Yes, it is. Thank you. Marika?
Yeah, doesn't work. One alternative option might be is just add an optional question, just saying how many domain disputes have you had over the last year, and then have something less than 10, between 10 and 50, more, just to have an idea, and the working group can then still decide once responses are received whether that has any kind of impact on how responses are weighed, but it might give a kind of indication that, for example, you know, all registrars that have very little domains, they tend to, you know, lock the domain immediately upon notification, while those that have up, you know, more than 500 per year, they do it at a certain, you know, you might be able to make some kind of correlation as to what practices are depending on the number of disputes. I mean, it doesn't necessarily, I think, need to mean that, you know, we're going to weigh that because they have little, you know, less domain disputes, their responses are less valuable or should be less taken into account, but it might be possible to make some kind of correlation. So maybe that might be a way to give a kind of, you know, those are not exact numbers, but it's just a kind of range between which, you know, registrars might fall. That might be a, you know, compromise.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Alan?
Yeah, Marika's channeling for me again. I think we want to ask the question in such a way that we're not asking people to go do research. You know, so if we use like about or approximately or something, how many do you do? And that will give us the ability, in addition to what Marika says, of if the rest of the response is really seems to be an edge case, the quantity will tell us whether it is an edge case or a common occurrence. So I think there's American getting an order of magnitude of the volume that goes along with the answers. I don't think we want to word it in such a way that we're encouraging people to go to research. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Alan. David, go ahead.
Thanks, David. Yes, I agree with Alan on this one. I think it's there is, in any event, still utility, I think, in asking the question in a sufficiently general way so that we can get an idea. I think also it's important that when the data comes back in and we're going through the process of weighing it, we obviously want to be working towards a solution that works well for everybody, regardless of the volume that they're having to deal with. But I do think that it's useful in considering the responses that we do have some sense of the number of cases that these sorts of experiences are reflecting. I think we need to be a bit utilitarian about it in some respects.
Okay. Just a couple of comments from the chat, which I think are just worth reading into the record. From Laurie, some registrars may not track the numbers if it's not a significant part of their workflow. And from Gabriella, it's too bad these statistics are not mandatory, I swear to God, English is my first language, for registrars. Is it mandatory for UDRP providers to keep statistics? And that's an interesting question. Is it mandatory for UDRP providers to keep statistics? Does anybody know? David, is it mandatory?
The short answer is it's not mandatory. There is a mandatory requirement for UDRP providers to post decisions that are rendered by panels, but there's not a mandatory requirement, so far as I'm aware, to post or to keep consolidated statistics on the numbers of UDRP disputes that are received. However, most of the UDRP providers do that. Certainly at WIPO, we keep real-time statistics up on our website of the number of UDRP complaints that we receive. I believe NAF, the National Arbitration Forum in the United States, does the same, or at least in similar fashion. The Czech Arbitration Court out of Prague, I believe, posts information about UDRP complaints that are decided. I don't think they post information about UDRP complaints that are filed. And I believe the ANDRC out of Hong Kong does post information about complaints that are filed. And I think they also post numbers of decided cases, although they certainly post the decisions themselves. I hope that's a useful distillation.
Thanks for that. I'll come to you just in one second, Marika. I have seen you. I haven't forgotten you. And no, Luke, I won't. Matt, as saying, we can ask the questions to ask approximately how many UDRPs the registrar handles. Exact numbers aren't really important for our purposes, just a general idea of whether the registrar has to handle locking for a bunch of UDRPs or just a few. Over to you, Marika. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. So I think I'm hearing indeed that, you know, the working group is happy to to have a question in there, and you know, which registrars can give an indication of how many UDRPs they handle. I think, you know, like with the other question, it's probably easiest if we make that a multiple choice one. So I'd just like to have some input from the working group, what would be, you know, appropriate ranges to give, you know, what are, you know, what covers small registrars, medium and large size. What are the what do people think would be the numbers we should include in that question?
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any thoughts on this, or should we just continue looking at the actual questions? Are there more of these, are there more significant edits there, Marieke, you think we should look at in the questionnaire?
This okay, is Marieke, I think in the registrar questionnaire, I think apart from, you know, the question we just discussed adding, I think it's that one seems basically done. So it's just a question for me putting that back into a Zoomerang, and you know, the working group then we need to discuss, you know, what kind of time frame we're looking at, how we're going to push this out. You know, I'm guessing we're going to push it through the registrar stakeholder group, but there might be other ways of reaching registrars. So, you know, those are some other items the working group. I don't know if you want to discuss that now or first move on to the other survey for the UDRP providers, but I think there were some more comments or more substantial comments made by WIPO, so it might take some more time to get through that.
So where are these more substantial ones, Marieke?
In the UDRP survey, I think, because I think...
No, I know that, but which number of question number is what I'm...
I know that's a separate survey, so I can pull it up now. The one on the screen is the one addressed to registrars, and the UDRP one is in a separate document. So if we're done with this one, I can go to the next one if people are happy.
Okay. Does anybody have anything further to add for the registrar survey? Sorry, Marieke, I'm being thick. Does anybody have anything further to add to the registrar survey at this juncture? Going once, going twice. Okay, go with the UDRP provider one, please, Marieke.
Give me a second while I'll pull it up, and I think in here it might be helpful for probably David to talk through the changes. Because I think, David, if I understand correctly, what you did is accept all the changes I had made, and everything you see on the screen are basically the changes you made. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Marieke.
Okay, so David, would you like to talk us through this?
Sure. So, for the first substantive question, which I think is question four of the survey, you can see that we've included a reference to approximately in that first line there to indicate that it's probably not going to be possible to give an absolutely precise answer. And we've also suggested inclusion of a phrase, a representative sample here, to reflect the fact that the responses to this are, at least not from our perspective, going to reflect our assessment of what has happened in each of the, I think, 22-odd thousand cases we've administered. We're going to need to look at a defined representative sample group of those cases and provide responses on the basis of that. So that's why we've suggested the use of those words in that first question. The fourth question. We've replicated a similar suggestion in question five below that, and suggested the inclusion of the words representative sample there as well to capture that idea. We've suggested an inversion of the question such that the response will provide information on cases in which the registrar has failed to confirm the lock of the domain name, rather than inviting the providers to comment on situations in which the lock of the domain name has resulted in the domain name not being transferred, because that's a very difficult question to answer and one that would be very speculative from a provider perspective. What we can analyze is...
Hold on. Slow down 1 second, please. 1 second. Sorry. Which question are you referring to here?
I'm on question five.
You're still on question five?
I am now on question five. Yes, I was previously on question four.
Okay. Sorry, I don't see the thing about lock in question 5. Or am I, was something taken away?
So the question in question 5 now reads, in approximately what percentage of UDRP proceedings that you handle, do registrars fail to confirm lock of the domain names at issue for the purposes of the UDRP dispute within 5 days of your sending a provider verification request to the concerned registrar? That's the way that the question is redrafted by us now reads?
Yes. And what was the original wording?
I haven't actually got the original wording in front of me. I'm sorry.
No, it's what you were saying about transfers, David, which was what threw me completely. Sorry.
Right. I'm sorry about the confusion there. But the previous wording of that question, and I'm going from memory here. I apologize that I don't have a copy of the previous wording in front of me. But in fact, I do have it now. Sorry, I pulled it up. So the previous wording was, in what percentage of UDRP proceedings that you have administered are you aware of the registrar having locked a domain name upon receipt of a UDRP complaint from the complainant, where the complainant would have copied the registrar on a communication serving the complaint on the registrant and UDRP service provider? And what I was identifying there was a difficulty from the provider perspective in answering that question, because the provider is not in a position to know, A, whether a registrar has locked a domain name as a consequence of the receipt of a UDRP complaint from the complainant.
Okay.
And so what we're doing is we're suggesting a rephrasing of that question so that we are instead asking the providers of the cases that they have handled, in what percentage of those cases do registrars fail to confirm lock of the domain name for purposes of the UDRP dispute within 5 days of your sending a provider verification request to the concerned registrar? And that's information that we can and do track, because of course, we receive or we don't receive a confirmation from the registrar in reply to that request that we send. And where there is a failure to confirm the lock, that's something that we know, because the registrar does not tell us. The reference to 5 days in that question captures the period of time that typically the provider would be required to proceed to a notification of the UDRP proceeding, assuming that the complainant had filed consistent with the UDRP rules and with the provider supplemental rules, and that there would be no need to correct a deficiency. That's why we're using that, we're suggesting using that time frame here.
Because okay, perfect. Sorry, can I just interrupt you just for 1 second, as Matt has his hand up and he's been waiting patiently for a few minutes. Matt, go ahead.
I was going to ask where the 5 days came from, and he just addressed that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Matt. Sorry, please continue, David.
That's it for question 5, at least from me. Unless anybody has any questions or would like me to address any other aspect of that change, I'll move on to question 6.
Go on. Go ahead.
So in question 6, the question is modified in our comments now reads, for those who can't see the Adobe, are you aware of registrars which lock domain names upon receipt of a UDRP complaint from the complainant? And if so, in what approximate percentage of UDRP proceedings administered by you are you aware of this having occurred? And the reason we've suggested phrasing it in this way is because we believe that we can give an approximate answer based on percentage ranges here, as suggested, but it would be very difficult for us to provide information on the amount of time that it would take a registrar to lock a domain name in response to the receipt of a complaint from a complainant, for the same reasons that it would be problematic for us to do that in respect of the preceding question, which is that we don't ask the registrars to confirm lock of a domain name in response to the receipt of a complaint from a complainant. Of course, they may very well do that. We ask them to confirm the lock in response to a registrar verification request, and that's data that we track, so that's information that we can provide. But here we would be very uncomfortable about providing information based on how long a registrar would take to lock the domain name in response to the receipt of a complaint from the complainant. We would suggest that if that's a question we're going to ask, it would probably be better directed to the registrars or perhaps to complainants if they would be tracking the Whois data in response to the copying of the registrar on their filed complaint.
Okay, thank you. Marika had her hand up. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm just wondering, as the question is currently phrased, if there should then be another answer added. Because if you're saying, are you aware, I guess the answer could be as well, no, we're not aware. And then, you know, the percentages don't apply either. Is that a correct assumption?
That's a good suggestion, I think.
So in other words, it becomes two questions instead of one.
Yeah, and you'd have like a yes-no for the first half, and then you'd retain the percentage bands for the second bit.
Okay. Anybody else have any thoughts on this? No? Okay. Now, I mean, you've rather than go through each and every single one of these here, I'm just looking at the other ones there. I think you've basically done the same kind of thing with the other questions, where you've just kind of twisted, well, not also twisted, because that sounds negative, where you've kind of rejigged the order of the wording slightly and then broken up the percentages, if I'm correct in what I'm seeing here. Would that be right?
I think very generally, yes. I mean, it means slightly different things with different questions, and there's a slightly different emphasis on some of them. But generally speaking, I think that's accurate. And maybe if there's anybody that has any particular concerns or would like me to clarify any aspect of the subsequent changes, I'm very happy to do that. Maybe that's a more efficient way to do it.
Okay. I mean, one thing I would suggest is, again, in question 8, you've got, are you aware of registrars which lock domain names only upon receipt of a notice of commencement? And if so, approximately, which is very similar to the one we were just looking at, number 6.
If the suggestion there is to split it, I think it's a good decision to split it in a similar way with the yes-no on the first part and the ranges on the second. There is one point just to flag for the consideration of the group maybe at this point. With respect to the use of the term notice of commencement, it wasn't absolutely clear to us whether the suggestion of this term in connection with this question was intended to capture the notice of commencement in the sense of the formal commencement of the UDRP proceedings by the provider or some other time in the proceeding. So I guess I would just open that one up to discussion. But the reason we've suggested the clarification in the text in the way that we did here was on the assumption that what the question is directed at getting at is the notification of the complaint under UDRP rules paragraph 4 and not some earlier point. Maybe that's a question that Matt could address if he wants to.
Certainly what I was going for initially, and if we just want to substitute notification of complaint across the board, I think that's fine to do.
I would probably suggest if it's okay, just leaving it in this particular question, because I had assumed that the purpose of the question a bit was to inquire a bit as to what, if any, registrars make a practice of locking, on that formal commencement of proceedings. Certainly our observation generally has been that most registrars will lock considerably earlier than that, typically in response to the receipt of the provider verification request or sometimes even on filing of the complaint. So I think it's useful to keep this one question here using the term notice of commencement, but I wouldn't use it subsequently. In part, the lock obligation, I suppose, in a sense, derives from the prohibition on the registrant moving the domain name registration under or in prohibition of with UDRP paragraph 8A, and that's a stipulation that applies as of the pendency of the UDRP proceedings. So there's something to note. So I would not apply it beyond this particular question. That'd be my suggestion.
Okay, thanks. I had put myself in the queue because I sorry, my throat is going out. The only comment I was going to make was I think the different type of notification is a key question. So I think you do need to differentiate between them because I think that kind of goes to the core of one of the questions that this working group needs to address.
The language that we've tried to use consistently in these modified comments is to use the term registrar verification to reflect the request from the provider that comes to the registrar to provide verification on the registrant data, and which typically includes the lock request from the provider, and to use the notice of commencement phrase only in connection with those questions where we have assumed that the purpose of the question is to deal specifically with the formal commencement of the UDRP proceeding. And the only question, as we understand it, where that question is being asked is in this question 8.
Okay. Does anybody else have any thoughts, any comments? Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. If I can maybe make a suggestion, what I can do next is put these two surveys as modified back into Zoomerang and send that out to the working groups. Everyone has a last opportunity to review, and then maybe at the next call we can sign off on these and release the surveys and maybe talk about as well how we push this out via which channels and what what timelines we're going to apply for people to provide responses. That might it's just a suggested way in getting closure on these two surveys.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Okay, I'm going to read out Luke's comment. Luke, I was thinking of something not quite related to the survey and maybe more to the unlocking part rather than the locking one. As for the UDRP policies, there is nothing mentioned regarding the unlocking of the domain, but only the implementation of this decision which we, registrars, can't always implement due to the lack of information from complainants. Full stop. So maybe we could use this working group to create an obligation for complainants to provide a minimum set of details to obtain the unlocking of the domain. What do you think? For the record, that is a comment from Luke, so Luke, not from me. Any reactions to Luke's comment? Deathly silence. Okay. Laurie, go ahead.
Well, I think that when we implement a decision, we always implement through the complainant and use the authorized rep as the contact. And then it's up to the authorized rep to get the control of the domain name to the client. So I'm not sure if that's helpful, from a registrar-wide standpoint, but that's the way that we've done it in the past. Now, when we deal with the CAC, the contact information is not available in the complaint or in the decision. All we're told is that, to transfer the domain name, and then we have to contact the CAC to get that information.
Okay, thanks, Laurie. Volker?
Yeah, I would second your request, Michaela, because it quite often happens that we get a notification of decision. We contact the complainant or the complainant's representative by the email address we have, and we get no answer whatsoever. So it would be helpful if the complainants would be including or requested to include by the arbitration providers to their whole contact data for all the four contact fields. So we could update the domain name right there. So in some cases, we haven't heard from the complainant in years, and those domains just lie here.
Okay, thank you. David?
Just to note, to the extent we would be looking at a lock obligation that would be said to derive from paragraph 8A of the UDRP, it's just worth noting that that provision provides, obviously, that a domain name registrant shall not transfer its domain name during a pending administrative proceeding or for a period of 15 business days after such proceeding is concluded. So that may provide some guidance on the question of when the domain name can be unlocked after a proceeding. With respect to the proposal about UDRP providers providing contact information for a complainant, I can confirm that at the WIPO we do include the name of the complainant and their authorised representative, and of course, obviously, it's very much in the interests of the complainant to timely getting in touch with the registrar with respect to the implementation of their decision if it's effective. But I just query what realistically can be done to facilitate that process if the complainant itself is not prepared to initiate that contact and to make the process move forward.
Okay, thanks. Matt?
This is Matt. One thing that I've seen some registrars do as well is after the 15-day period has elapsed, they will simply move the domain name to a new account at the set up at their registrar and provide login details to the complainant and their authorized representative. That sort of lets the registrar wash their hands of the matter a little bit because it's in an account, and if the complainant wants to renew the domain or transfer it or do whatever they want to do with it, it's in their court to do it. I don't know. Everyone doesn't do it, but I've certainly seen that happen fairly frequently.
Okay, thanks, everyone. Now to throw water on the entire thing. I hate to say this, but I think that it might be outside the scope of this working group's charter to delve into that area. However, I will ask Marika what she thinks. I suspect that it is delving outside the area of our charter, but Marika might be a better qualified. Marika?
This is Marika. I'm not really sure if I'm the person qualified to rule on that, but I think if you look at the charter questions, if people feel that it, you know, fits in with, you know, any of those questions where, you know, that issue could be addressed as well, and there's, you know, consensus within the working group that that is an issue that falls within those charter questions, you know, I think there is scope or, you know, room for maneuver there. But if people really feel that it is beyond the questions that are being asked in the charter, then it's more challenging. However, still, that doesn't, you know, preclude things, because if the working group still strongly feels that that's an issue that should be covered as part of these discussions, you can always go back to the GNSO Council and ask for a modification of the charter to specifically allow addressing of that issue. So, you know, there are different ways to look at it.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Just for the record, I mean, the reason why I'm quite cautious about this is because I'm very, very conscious of the fact that the GNSO has made a clear ruling on there being no PDP related to UDRP itself, and that whereas we do have a charter related to a specific, primarily operational aspect of it. So I'm just trying to make sure that we don't overstep the line. David, go ahead.
Thanks, David. I suppose just to note that, in a sense, if you would regard the lock obligation, again, as related to the status of the domain name during the pendency of a UDRP proceeding, from one perspective, you could see this as an issue that relates more to the implementation of a UDRP decision after the conclusion of that UDRP proceeding, after it has run its course. So, indeed, I think there might be a legitimate question as to whether or not it's within the fairly limited scope of the charter, as at least as presently defined.
Okay. Now, I will firmly remove my hat as chair to make one comment. Speaking as a registrar, I would be fully supportive of what some of the other registrars have said about this entire thing, because we, even though we haven't dealt with many UDRPs, we have had an incredibly frustrating experience when dealing with the ones that we've had to deal with, including in one instance, one charming law office who thought that we were somehow magically going to make the domain name magically move from our accreditation to another registrar's accreditation without knowing anything more. It was just going to happen, magically. Anyway, I'll put my chair hat back on and go back to being objective. Moving on. Okay, then we've gone through the questionnaire here. Luke suggesting, it's made a couple of suggestions. I think it would be a good idea if Luke, could you follow up on the mailing list, please? That's your little bit of homework for this week. We also have a few comments that we received on the survey, which are up in the chat there, from Sherry Falco. Sherry on the call. Oh, she is. Regarding the questions to registrars about locks, perhaps we can consolidate all those questions and ask a more free-form type question like, please describe what kind of locks you use throughout the UDRP process. Oh, damn, we already did address that, did we? Oh, where did I miss that? Sorry, Marika. Did we address Juan Manuel Rojas's query as well?
We didn't discuss it, but I think you did ask a question on the mailing list to get some further clarification on that. We did cover the WIPO question or comment.
I'm sorry. I've only had six coffees so far today. I'm slowing down. Juan Manuel Rojas had a query which went to the list, and I replied to him. Juan Manuel, do you wish to clarify that now, or will you do it via the mailing list?
I don't think that that really doesn't need to clarify that, because it's just too statistic theme and issue, and maybe we were talking about the statistics, and we know that maybe the subject of the important issue of this group, working group, is not of the statistics. And maybe it's not important to do it. Just I was wondering about it, but I don't think that maybe it's relevant at this point.
Okay. So maybe you could have a look at so if you're interested for your own personal interest, as was discussed earlier on this call, several of the providers do publish relatively detailed statistics, so you might find most information there. Okay, then, moving on. Next item on the agenda was, and we're running out of time here, so I'm going to have to kind of speak really, really quickly, which isn't a challenge for me. I am Irish, after all. Okay, request for input from other stakeholder groups, SOs and ACs. The simple question here is, do we want to do this now? Or do we want to do this at the same time in parallel with a public comment forum? Does anybody have any feelings or thoughts on this subject, apart from Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. It's just to clarify, as the working group decided that, you know, you don't want to start a public comment forum until you get the feedback on the survey, you know, to help inform questions you might want to ask as part of a public comment forum. Do you want to do the same thing with requesting input from stakeholder groups and constituencies and other SOs, ACs, or do you feel that, you know, there's already an opportunity now to reach out to those different parties for their input. As you might recall, it is a requirement to ask stakeholder groups, GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies for input, and they need a minimum of 35 days to provide feedback, or they have a minimum of 35 days to do so. On the other supporting organizations and advisory committees, it's strongly recommended that a working group reaches out at its initial stages to the different groups to, you know, get input to help inform the deliberations of the working group. So the question is there, you know, is that something you want to do now, for example, in parallel with releasing the survey? So responses and answers are coming in at the same time and can be reviewed together. Or is that something you think will work better, you know, once you have the responses to this survey, and you might want to do in parallel to a public comment forum?
Okay, thank you, Marika. Alan, you had your hand up.
But I lowered it.
Yeah, but I saw you had it up.
I know. I don't have a comment at this point.
Okay. Never let it be said that I wasn't trying to get your input, Alan.
Thank you very much.
Matt does definitely have his hand up.
I do. I think it may make sense to get our survey results back before we reach out either to other stakeholder groups or to the public in general, just so we'll, if nothing else, be able to say this is what current practice appears to be, or if there appears to be a division between current practice based on number of UDRPs registrars are handling, or whatever data we get back, I think will be useful to provide to every other group that we reach out to essentially let them either bless or object to the current state of practice.
Okay. That, that makes a lot of sense from my perspective, personally. If anybody has any strong feelings about this, could you please put this to the main list within the next couple of days so we can move forward on this? Though I personally think that what Matt's saying makes a lot of sense. The other thing as well is, sorry, looking at the time here, David has also provided a link with a range of information and real-time statistics about WIPO's role as a UDRP, and he's provided a link to that. For the meeting in Prague, what are people's thoughts? What would you like to do at a meeting in Prague? What would you like to see as its purpose? You know, what kind of thoughts do you have in that, have about such a meeting? Again, you don't need to answer this immediately this minute, but if you can think about it, I mean, we've had meetings in the past where we've at ICANN meetings where it's been a normal working group meeting for most of the meeting, and then maybe we've kind of opened it up a little bit so people can, you know, share their experiences, or, you know, we've done a number of different things. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I actually wanted to comment on the preceding agenda point that I think we skipped over on the continued development of work plan and approach, and just to, you know, put a stake in the ground that the, you know, the working group is expected to develop a work plan, basically outlining the main milestones. I think basically on the discussion we already had now, maybe on the stakeholder group and constituency statements and the public forum, you know, we can probably fill in some of those milestones in a, you know, kind of a calendar. But maybe people can start thinking a bit about what they would like to set themselves as a goal for, you know, delivering an initial report and going from there. And maybe that's to something to discuss in further detail at the next meeting.
All right. Thank you, Marika. With respect to the next meeting, again, I probably will not be able to make it, and I will have to ask Alan to step in and do that wonderful job. But if Alan can't do it, I'm sure somebody else can. Fingers crossed. Because next week I will be melting in the desert, I think. So at what time of the day is it, Laurie, at the moment in Arizona?
It's 7 a.m. Or that's not 7, it's 8. It's 8:04 a.m.
Okay, so maybe I actually will be able to make the call next week. Okay, sorry. I probably will be able to make the call next week. Assuming I can get out of bed. Okay, assuming I can get out of bed really early, I can make the call next week.
You can do it from bed, Michele.
Yeah, Alan,
no video phones.
Oh, no, it's not that, Alan. It's just I have an awful habit of taking phones into my bed and then losing them. I have been woken up more than once by a phone ringing and it's scaring the hell out of myself because it literally was, you know, halfway down the bed and I couldn't understand how it got there.
All I was saying is we'll take you any way we can get you.
I better not respond to that because that would this call is being recorded, and that will cause all sorts of problems. Okay then, so look forward to speaking to you all next week. And if anybody has any issues or strong feelings about anything, could they please raise them via the mailing list? Thank you.
Thank you all.
The call is adjourned.
Bye.
Thank you all.